Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Lords Podcast with Will Rowe.
Well, welcome to this month's Lords Podcast. I'm very pleased to be joined by former England captain and Sky cricket commentator Andrew Strauss, along with Wisden editor and Daily Mail cricket writer Lawrence Booth. Welcome both.
Thank you.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Good to see you both. Now, we have a packed podcast with plenty to discuss as the English season gets underway. We'll look at all things England, and my guests will pick their starting 11 for the West Indies tour. With the latest edition of Wisden Out, we'll look at the state of the game, ask where did England go next, and pore over comments made by incoming ECB chairman Colin Graves on the future of Test cricket. To finish, I'll put Andrew and Lawrence's knowledge to the test with the podcast quiz. But first, I'd like to ask some questions to you, Andrew, that have come in from listeners using the hashtag AskStrauss on Twitter. The first one's from Sean Wilson. What was the most important innings in your career? Nice, easy one to start.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think you always look at kind of, you know, from a personal point of view or a team point of view. The one that stands out for me was the 100 I got in the first innings of the Oval Test match in the 2005 Ashes series.
This one's from Sport and Heritage. The World Cup got good press here in the USA. What needs to happen to grow cricket in North America? Happy to bring you in here, Lawrence.
Wow, my specialist subject. Well, there's a huge subcontinental diaspora, isn't there, in North America. So if they can target the Indian, the Pakistani and Sri Lankan expats who live on both coasts, especially the West Coast, I think, then they've got a good chance. I think there's a big Caribbean contingent in Florida as well, so there is a possibility there.
So maybe get them watching the IPL and the Caribbean Premier League.
Absolutely.
There you go. Ryan Bradshaw asked, what did you learn on the MCC tour to Namibia back in 2001?
That's a good question. I learned there's some very good beer in Namibia, which I thoroughly enjoyed. And also, actually, I learned about how fantastic those MCC tours are. They're combining professional cricketers with very good amateur cricket against some excellent cricketers from other parts of developing parts of the world. It was an absolute privilege to be on that tour.
Lovely stuff. Manjoy Bahalararu, I think that's how it's pronounced. Apologies if that's wrong. What is your favourite Indian cricket ground and why?
Well, that is another good question. I personally love the Brabourne Cricket Stadium in Mumbai, the CCI. That's a kind of relic of the colonial past, and it's a little bit more smaller and more intimate than some of the big kind of big concrete kind of coliseums you have there. So, yeah, I think as a traditional cricket ground in India, that's my favourite.
Lovely stuff. The Cricket Badger asks, who are you tipping in the IPL and would you have fancied a season of it?
I would have loved many seasons of it. Unfortunately, my style of play is not conducive to the IPL in any way, shape or form. Who am I tipping for the IPL? Well, that's a very good question. I think it's always hard to look past the Chennai Super Kings. They've been very consistent over a long period of time and I don't see it being any different this year.
Lawrence, have you got a team?
I would go with that as well. Dhoni seems to know how to win games in the last over by himself. So, CSK all the way.
I'd like to ask the next question to the two of you. This comes in from Mia. Who do you think is going to win the county championship?
again, another fool's game predicting the winner of the county championship. I mean, Yorkshire looked very strong on paper, I think. It depends how many players they lose to the England team over the course of the summer. On paper, they're definitely the strongest in the division.
Yeah, I think that will be crucial for Yorkshire. I think Sussex are worth a look. Ed Joyce will be there the whole time. McGoffin takes wickets for fun, and they've made a couple of good signings, Tymal Mills and Ajmal Shahzad, so I'll be looking out for them.
Next question from Neil Harris. Why are ex-England players so reluctant to get into coaching?
Well, I think that's an interesting question. I wouldn't say that people aren't interested in getting into coaching. You know, Paul Collingwood seems to be going down that route at the moment. But ultimately, you know, coaching is a big commitment for a player, and it's got to be right for the player from a kind of, I suppose, a personal perspective as well as anything. I mean, I think coaching is a great way in which England players can give something back to the game. But also, they shouldn't be arrogant enough just to assume they're going to be great coaches because they're excellent players. And so going through the coaching qualifications and all that sort of stuff and doing your time is important.
Jenny asks, who do you think, or what do you think, was the key element that marked the Strauss flower era?
I would have said that we were very fortunate with a very talented group of players, but we had a very clear focus as to how we were going to play our cricket, and we had a very, very strong team environment. The way people connected and pushed in the same direction made us a team that was bigger than the sum of our parts.
Richard Shelley asks, is mental strength or toughness more important than technique in moving from county to test cricket?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, mental strength, toughness is the difference between being a good cricketer and a not very good one, and also the difference between being a good one and a great one. You know, I think we probably don't focus on it enough, and we focus too much on technique, especially in this country. You need to have a method of keeping good balls out, and you need to know your game well. The rest of it, it's all mental.
And finally, who's the best player you've played with? That one from George McCormick.
Well, I would have to say Kevin Peterson, in terms of being able to do things that other cricketers couldn't. In the England side, while I was involved, he was the one guy that stood out for me. I think the most underrated cricketer that I played with was Paul Collingwood. You know, how much he gave to the team, his ability to play the right innings at the right time, and his influence on the dressing room never came out in his actual figures at the end of the day.
Lovely stuff. Well, thanks to everyone for sending in their questions on Twitter. Now I'd like to turn my attention to the England v West Indies series. Before the two-match home test series to New Zealand and the Ashes this summer, England start their test year with a three-match away series in the West Indies. Alistair Cook heads up a 16-man squad in the Caribbean, which includes Yorkshire batsman Adam Lyth and Durham seam bowler Mark Wood, both getting their first call-up to an England squad. Yorkshire spinner Adil Rashid, who has played a handful of one-dayers for the national side, is also part of that touring party. Now, Andrew and Lawrence, what I'd like you to do now is, if you could select from the 16 that England have taken out to the Caribbean, what would be your sort of your combined 11, or what do you think would be England's strongest 11 out there?
Well, I'll read out what I think the batting might be, the top six, and see if Andrew agrees or disagrees, but I'm going with what I think they'll go with, which will be Cook, Trott, Balance, Bell, Root, and then I'm going with Stokes at six for this first test. I think it'd be great to see him given a chance as a batsman. I think he was a bit confused last year. He came in at eight or nine in a couple of the tests, and he made three ducks, and things started to fall away from him. So I'd love to see him treated as a proper all-rounder. Have him at six.
Yeah, very much so. You know, I think now's the time to see Ben Stokes come of age as a cricketer. He has shown incredible promise, but is flattered to deceive up till now. And I think we need to invest in some game time in him and allow him to flourish.
Do you think he's been a bit hard done by in the fact that it's almost we're not sure whether he's a batsman or a bowler or the way England have used him?
No, I think you know, he is a genuine all-rounder and will be treated as such and should be treated as such. You know, I don't think he can have any real complaints about being left out of the World Cup side. He got given an opportunity in Sri Lanka and didn't take it. But at the same time, like any player, you're going to get mentally scarred by being left out of the side too often. And that's my point, really. We need to invest some time in him. Because he is one of those X-factor players that can change the course of a match. And they're a little bit kind of thin on the ground in English cricket at the moment.
Do you think the other player that you both selected is Jonathan Trott's opening with Alistair Cook? Do you feel that Adam Leith could maybe be given a chance in that opening berth, or are you both happy with Trott there?
Yeah, I mean, Leith may be unlucky on this tour. It looks like they've decided that Trott will open with Alistair Cook. Leith may only get a go if Trotty has a complete nightmare in the first two tests, but I don't blame them for going with Trott. He's got 49 tests under his belt. He's averaging in the high 40s. He's reliable. They need that solidity back at the top of the order, especially with Cook not scoring 100 for such a long time. So I don't blame them for going with Trott. Some people may say it's unadventurous, but he's the kind of guy you miss more when he's not there, and we've noticed that in the last 18 months.
And can I have your 7, 8, 9, 10 and 11?
Yeah, well, I'm not 100% clear on the bowling options at this stage. And I think, you know, when you're playing a test series, it's really important to see how people are bowling in the warm-up games. But, you know, I think Josh Butler comes in at 7 for me. I would then be playing Adil Rashid. And then it's three seamers out of Anderson, Broad, Jordan and Plunkett for me. Now, there may be some concerns about Stuart Broad's fitness. Liam Plunkett is very much a rhythm bowler, and we're not quite sure what his rhythm is at the moment. I think we know a little bit more about Chris Jordan. But, you know, ultimately, I think this is one of the big questions for English cricket in the next 6 months or so. Can we get a bowling attack that can take 20 wickets consistently? And the seamers against Australia and New Zealand are going to have to match their seamers. And that's a pretty big task that those guys have got on their hands.
Is that a bit of a worry at the moment, England's seam attack ahead of the summer?
Well, it's teetering on being a worry. I mean, Stuart Broad limped off today in the game after four balls. We don't know what his fitness situation is going to be, but if he breaks down, then a lot rests on Jimmy Anderson, and Chris Wokes will be back for the summer, we hope. Chris Jordan made some progress towards the end of last summer, but when you look at the strength and depth the Australian seamers have, it's quite frightening, really. You know, forget Mitchell Johnson. We were just talking before the podcast, as Mitchell Starks had a terrific World Cup. They've got a lot of promising young quicks. So, yes, it's a problem. I kind of think Jimmy will have a good summer. I think he'll swing the ball again and be back to his best. It's what he does best. And Broad, he may realise his place isn't as safe as he thought it was and may have to prove a point, and that may be good for England.
Absolutely. Now, the 152nd edition of the Wisden Cricketers Almanac hits the shelves this week. The Cricketing Bible has once again picked its five Cricketers of the Year. They are Gary Balance, Moeen Ali, Adam Leith, Jeetam Patel and Angelo Matthews. As well as this, Kumar Sangakkara has been named the leading cricketer in the world, while for the first time a leading woman cricketer in the world has also been named. That accolade goes to Australia's Meg Lanning. Well, Lawrence, could you talk us through the process of picking those five and how you got to those?
Yeah, well, I just monitor the summer and hope that someone puts their hand up who hasn't already put their hand up, because there are two criteria. They can't have been chosen before, and the emphasis is on the English summer. So, I mean, I thought from an England perspective, Gary Balance and Moeen Ali pretty well picked themselves. Balance scored 300s in his first test season at home, filled the hole that Trott had left brilliantly, really, averaging 60 by the end of the summer. Moeen Ali, there was a lot of concern, wasn't there, about would England be able to replace Graham Swann's off-breaks. Moeen was called a part-timer, but he ended the Indian series with 19 wickets at 23, I think it was, and replaced him brilliantly, and also looked the part at times with the bat. I mean, I know this didn't count towards the award, but he got that 72-ball 100 against Sri Lanka and Colombo in a one-day international and really looked the part. Adam Leith and Jeetam Patel are in there for their county performances. Leith scored 600s and helped Yorkshire to the county championship. And Jeetan Patel, 107 wickets in all formats for Warwickshire. So he was the leading wicket taker in the country and then was the driving force really behind them winning the NatWest T20 Blast. Angelo Matthews captained Sri Lanka to victory in all three formats. I don't think an overseas captain has done that before in England. So he picked himself as well.
Is it just you that picks him, or is there a group of you that decides?
Well, the editor has the final say, so okay. That's one of the nice perks of the job. I mean, I run it past a few Wisden colleagues to check that I haven't gone insane and missed someone obvious, or we've already picked someone that I want to pick. But ultimately, I can pull rank, I suppose.
Great stuff. And Meg Lanning, leading woman cricketer in the world, can you...
Yeah, I mean, this is a new award, so we felt that the growth in women's cricket over the last few years needed reflecting. We've had a couple of women cricketers of the year, so Claire Taylor and Charlotte Edwards last year have been among the five Wisden cricketers of the year, but we thought, no, it's time to have a separate leading women's award. Meg was, I think she finished last year top of the T20 and ODI rankings. She captained Australia at the age of 21 to the World 2020 title in Bangladesh. She looks like a star in the making, so that was a fairly straightforward choice.
And the front cover, you've gone with Moeen Ali. I know there's a few people on the Twitter sphere asking, maybe not Philip Hughes. Could you talk us through that decision? I know you've explained it already before, but
yeah, well, it was an easy decision. I mean, we did consider Philip Hughes. We have to reflect the fact to a degree that the bulk of our readership is English. Moeen Ali was a rarity. He was a good news story from English cricket last year, so we thought that we'd go with him. And I've also made a point in my editor's notes about the fact that I don't think English cricket is as good as it should be about harnessing the South Asian talent within English cricket. So Moeen happens to be a poster boy for that, but look, he wouldn't be on that cover were it not for his cricketing deeds.
And Andrew, you were Wisden Cricketer of the Year in 2005. Following that impressive summer when you made your debut in 2004, it's quite a special accolade because once you've done it once, you can never get it again. But obviously, it's quite hard to get there. What was the feeling for you at the time?
Yeah, look, I think this was all part of a sort of whirlwind 12 months for me, getting into the England team and hitting the ground running. And then, you know, I think this is one of those accolades that you hope at one stage in your career you do something noticeable enough to be included on this list. And it's a very illustrious list. So for me to happen so quickly to me was a bit of a shock, if I'm honest. But, you know, I think there's that kind of link with the past. It's a little bit like getting your name on the honours board at Lord's, you know, or you think of all those kind of those Wisden Cricketers almanacs on people's library shelves, and to have your name included in one of those is a very special feeling.
And as editor, Lawrence, it's quite a big job for you because I'm going to come onto it now. The notes by the editor section, it's pulled over by the national press, and you're almost the rudder of the kind of the cricketing world, I guess, when you make those. And you've made some comments in this year's Wisden. You've taken aim at the ECB, in particular the handling of the Peterson saga, and also said that as a governing body, they've repeatedly lost touch with the basic idea that the national team belongs to us all. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think there's a lot of anger out there among fans. I mean, you only have to go on Twitter to sense that, but it's not just Twitter. You talk to people as well. But I use the Peterson saga as an example. His sacking was a matter of opinion, and I felt at the time if that's what they thought, then that's fair enough. They obviously had their reasons. But I think since then they failed to do what they said they'd do, which was give reasons behind the sacking. They said that once the confidentiality clause between the two camps ran out in October, that the truth would become clear. Well, that never happened, and I think that's angered a lot of people. There's taking fans for granted a little on that. Another thing I mentioned in the notes was they had a slightly head-in-the-sands attitude to the one-day team. I think I felt that perhaps Alistair Cook shouldn't have been almost promised the job for the World Cup and then have it taken away from him so soon before the tournament started. I thought he should have probably stepped down as one-day captain after they'd beaten India in the Tests. He could have gone with his stock high, could have had a few months off, charged his batteries for 17 Tests in 10 months, which is what they got, and given Owen Morgan a greater run at that World Cup. He didn't get it, and England had another disaster. There's one more point which I made in the notes, which was about the drop in recreational playing numbers. And I wonder whether this has something to do with the fact that cricket is still behind a satellite paywall, effectively. Unless you have Sky TV, you can't get regular access to live cricket, and I think that's very important.
Where do England go from here? Because what you've just been saying, and what I think the general kind of consensus is they're not in a great place. But, you know, there's almost a blank slate. With incoming chairman Colin Graves, will come on to him in a moment's time, and also Tom Harrison as chief exec. You know, how do they recapture maybe the public's imagination like they did in the 2005 Ashes series?
By winning the Ashes this summer. And that's going to be a pretty stern task for the players. You know, ultimately, it's very important for English cricket to move on from the Kevin Peterson situation. You know, that threatens to kind of envelop everything at the moment. And the story is becoming more of a distraction than actually him playing or not. You know, it's become that big. And, you know, the ECB and England's team's efforts to move on from him haven't worked so far. And that's because basically they've lost too many cricket matches. And so by winning, it allows them to move forward. You know, I think it's going to... There's always that kind of knee-jerk reaction when you play poorly in a World Cup, that everything has to change and we need to look at everything, anyone who's in any sort of position of power, and say he needs to go. You know, I think now's the time for just some strategic planning. You know, ultimately, the England cricket team and those around it have been fighting fires non-stop for at least 12 months now, probably getting on to 18 months. That's not healthy. They've got to start taking control of the agenda and moving the team forward.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're now in a situation where they have three captains again. You were the first captain to end up in that situation where you were test captain. Then you had Alistair Cook as one day captain and Stuart Broad as T20 captain. You'd retired from ODI cricket, so that was kind of your choice. Is that a healthy scenario to be in or not?
Well, look, I think in an ideal world, no. You have one captain for all formats, but it's a dose of realism. I mean, the amount of cricket that we play, I personally think there should be more specialisation with players focusing either on test cricket or one day cricket. It's a very difficult job, the England captain's job, and to keep doing it for an extended period of time. We only have to look at how England captains in the past, how that affected their form, myself included, and I think that's part of the reason that Alistair Cook's got himself into the situation he has got himself into. So I quite like the fact that the one-day captain at the moment is a specialist one-day player. And I think too often we've kind of used it as a rehearsal for the test job at some stage. So I'm not unhappy with the format we've got at the moment. But, you know, the captain doesn't win games of cricket. It's up to the players to go out and perform.
I'd like to bring in some more questions from Twitter on that, on the captaincy. I've got three questions here, so I'll ask them all in one go. But Ashley Watson asks, do you think the criticism of Cook is getting harsh considering he has 25 test tons? Ian Thorburn says, will Alistair Cook be England captain at the end of the summer? And Stephen Olive says, how long, in your considered opinion, is Alistair Cook's position tenable? So there's clearly, there is pressure on Cook at the moment. There's no doubt about that, and he knows it. I mean, how do you assess that? And as a former captain, how did you deal with that pressure?
Well, look, the pressure is always on as England captain. And I think as an England captain, you can avoid a measure of pressure if you're either scoring runs yourself or the team's winning or both. But if the team's not winning and you're not scoring runs, then your place is going to come under a lot of scrutiny very quickly. Alistair Cook understands that situation. The only way out of it for him is to find a way of either winning matches or scoring runs himself. And I think I know him as a person, I know him as a player. I'm absolutely certain he's going to score runs this summer. You know, I think he's overdue. He's a good enough player to come, bounce back from what he's been through. But, you know, ultimately, if he doesn't and England lose the Ashes, then, you know, the betting is against him. I can't see how he'd be able to keep his position if that was the case.
And Lawrence, your thoughts on the pressure on Cook at the moment? Because it is the England captaincy, it's one of those. I mean, I can't remember. There was one journalist that once said that the England captaincy and being the football manager of the national England side are the two toughest jobs in English sport. So it's,
yeah, I feel for him. He has to face up to us and the press every so often, explain himself. I remember with Andrew, actually, there was the press conference in Gaul a few years ago, and England had just lost their fourth test in a row, I think. So it came after the 3-0 in Pakistan. I think maybe the second question in the press conference was, Andrew, do you think you've taken this team as far as it can go? And it was like, wow, he's only lost four tests, and just because he hasn't scored a few runs. I mean, it's an unforgiving media. It's a competitive media. But they hold the players to account. Perhaps the players feel we go too far at times. But the facts are there. Cook hasn't scored an international 100 for 59 innings. And everyone in English cricket wants him to succeed. Everyone wants the Ashes back and the captain scoring runs. If England lose the Ashes again, that's going to be tough for Cook.
And talking about media and press conferences, I think every time that Alistair Cook gets asked about Kevin Peterson, it just seems to be hovering around the England side. Is it something? I mean, Lawrence, when do you think the Kevin Peterson situation will go away? I mean, obviously, with time, it will, because he's going to get older. But I mean, in all seriousness, when does this narrative and this story finish? Or does it not?
And Andrew said it a few minutes ago, when England start winning regularly, then it stops, really. They can't afford to lose in the West Indies. If they do that, then a couple of heads may roll. And if Peterson is back home in England scoring runs for Surrey, I mean, a couple of factors. Those two, England need to, for Peterson to get back in the team, it's a tiny chance. But if England keep losing, if Peterson's scoring runs, but he also has to sort of mend the bridges he's burnt with various people, not just people in the dressing room, but various administrators. So it'll take a lot to get him back in the team, but if England are winning, the story becomes quieter.
I think also, you know, if you look at it from pure cricketing kind of logic, after this Ashes is over, it's quite hard to see a situation where Kevin Peterson would come back into the side, because you're building towards the next Ashes in 2.5 years' time. You're building towards the next World Cup in 2019. You know, I think if you were to bring Kevin Peterson back, it would be a short-term measure to help you win the Ashes. I can't see that happening personally, because there's just too many bridges to build in too short a period of time. But I think after the Ashes, that the story does move forward somewhat.
Time does ultimately start running out at that point. Right, now, incoming ECB chairman Colin Graves has stated that he personally would like to look at making test matches 4 days long. He was speaking to me during the Champion County match in Abu Dhabi last month. His comments caused lots of headlines and discussion. Before we discuss this, let's listen to exactly what Graves said.
Personally, I think we should look at 4 day test cricket. Personally, I would play 105 overs a day, starting at 10:30 in the morning with all the facilities we've got now, the ground drainage. You could then finish it whenever you finish it. Every ground's got lights. So you play 4 days, 105 overs. Every test match would start on a Thursday. So you have 2 days corporate, Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday, Sunday, families. From a cost point of view, you'd save that fifth day, which would save a hell of a lot of money, both from the ground's point of view, the broadcaster's point of view. And when you look at it in reality, there's not many test matches where people turn up and watch it, even on the fifth day. So if you look at it in real terms, from a cost point of view, entertainment point of view, production point of view, there's a lot of pluses. So to me, I would look at that.
It seems to make a lot of sense when you listen to him there. What are the drawbacks?
Well, the English weather's a big drawback. If you lose 1 day of test cricket, you're suddenly looking at a three-day test. I hear what he says about 105 overs. The other problem is that teams barely get through 90 overs these days in test cricket. They're always using the extra half hour, and even then they don't always get there. So someone would have to be, the match referee would have to be very strict on over rates. 10:30 start, does that load it too much in favour of the toss, especially late on in the season? I don't know, perhaps even early on in the season. But the old NatWest final in September, 10:30, you didn't want to lose that toss. I think those are the... You also lose things like the deteriorating fifth-day pitch. I know pitches don't deteriorate as much as they used to, but that was always a factor, wasn't it? You might pick your side with a thought to unleashing your spinner or two spinners on the last day. So the nature of the game would change. So it's not a totally ridiculous idea. I just think there are things that need to be thought through.
Yeah, I think from my point of view, on the playing side, it's a massive ask to ask players to play 105 overs in a day. If you think about how mentally and physically you're exhausted at the end of 90 overs, to add another 15 overs on top of that, I think you would find there'd be more dead cricket in the middle where your seamers can't bowl, your fifth bowler will be bowling. I'm not convinced it jazzes. I don't think it... I can understand it from a commercial point of view, definitely. From an actual test cricket being a better product to watch, I'm not convinced that is the case. So... I think let's look at ways of improving test cricket, and I think providing a context for test matches is a massive part of that, whether it's a World Test Championship or another way of providing context is absolutely crucial. I think we saw at the World Cup, didn't we, the difference between a 50-over cricket when there is context and there's a World Cup on the line to a kind of a sort of bog-standard 5 one-day international series at the end of an English summer, whatever. The difference in the product was incredible, and we don't have that showcase event for test cricket. And at a time where test cricket is increasingly becoming marginalised, we run the risk of it becoming more and more of a sideshow.
And one of the things Graves said he'd like to see is Thursday starts for every test. I mean, obviously commercially that might not work so well with TV scheduling, but we did see last year that the test match at Southampton starting on a Sunday wasn't really ideal.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be the case that all tests started on a Thursday and people knew that Thursday was test match day. Now, you don't know what day a test is going to start, and that's partly a function of trying to squeeze all these games in and playing back-to-back tests and so on. I take Colin's point about the dead fifth day. David Lloyd... Bumble thinks that you should make the fifth day free, and just use it as a chance to get people in there, and I think that there's some sense to that as well.
Great stuff. Well, I'd like, just before we come on to the podcast to finish off, there's a few more questions for you, Andrew, on the Twitter sphere, so thanks for sending these in. Charlie Cook would like to ask, how does the current England setup go about moving forward and getting to number one? And Sandipan Banerjee says, do you feel Morgan is the right man to lead England in ODIs? I know you've kind of answered those two questions already in the podcast, but if you just come back to those, that'd
sure,
be great.
Sure, yeah. Well, certainly on the Morgan issue, I definitely think he deserves a good run at it. He's an exciting cricketer. He's a one-day specialist, and I think he'll have some pretty strong ideas as to how to take the England one-day team forward. So I think he is the right man for the current environment. In terms of how do England go about moving back to number one, I think they need to identify a style of cricket that they want to play. They need to commit to it. They need to get a. They need to work a lot on the environment, and they ultimately need more confident players. So how the environment hopefully will breed that, but winning will also breed that. So, you know, none of this is rocket science. I don't think it's about going completely off-piste and trying to rip up everything that's been done in the past. But you do need some calm people under a kind of firestorm of pressure at the moment.
Couple of questions here on Nasser Hussain. I don't think you seem to go anywhere without being asked this question, especially when you come to Lords. Do you constantly remind Nasser about the debut run out? That's from Joseph. And what did Nasser say to you after he ran you out, from Kieran Whitehouse?
Well, Nasser's never apologised for a thing in his life, so I think he admonished me for not backing up enough, even though clearly there was no run there. And you know, I think I'd like to say I've moved on from it, but I'm not sure that's strictly true, you know. It still hurts me a little bit. But we have a bit of banter about it. You know, I think thankfully, you know, this wasn't a kind of a one-off piece for him. He was famed around both the international and the county circuit for both the number of run-outs he'd been involved in and the very, very few times that he'd been the one that was run out. So any stick he gets, he thoroughly deserves.
Lovely. The last few questions, I presume that they've all come in from parents. So a bit of tips and advice for young cricketers growing up. Paul Jones says, my son is a left-handed batsman. What advice would you give him for driving a bowler who bowls round the wicket and swings it? So I guess you'll have to know which way he's swinging it. But if there's a right arm round the wicket coming to you as a left-handed batsman, what advice do you have for setting up to face that?
Well, generally, when they did that to me, I got out. So I'm not sure I'm the person to answer that. I think really important to think about squaring your stance up. So wherever the ball's coming from, you need to be square to. As left-handers, we tend to be quite open when right-armers are coming over the wicket. When they come round the wicket, it's a vastly different angle, and you've got to square your stance up to be able to deal with that.
Question from Kieran. Question from her son. How does one become a better cricketer? Or maybe what advice do you have for a young cricketer?
You become a better cricketer by learning from your mistakes, actually. You know, I think there's a lot of talk about drilling and hitting thousands of balls and 10,000 hours and all that sort of stuff. I think cricket, you learn from playing. So when you make a mistake, remember your thought process when you made it. Remember the type of bowling, remember the conditions. Make sure you don't make the same mistake twice.
And the final question from David Lear. Which cricket book would you suggest to a developing 13-year-old cricketer?
Well, I think anyone who's got any sort of captaincy aspirations, the Art of Captaincy by Mike Brearley is still one of the great books as far as I'm concerned, and a real insight to the mind of one of England's greatest captains, but also allows you to think about the game of cricket in a different way as well. So if I wanted to recommend, that would be it.
And Lawrence, as editor of Wisden?
Crikey, well, apart from Wisden, you mean? Yes, The Art of Captaincy. Perhaps you should read some humorous books. Marcus Berkman, Rain Men, gets to grips with the sort of dynamics of useless cricketers like most of us. But yeah, really you wouldn't go far wrong.
Great stuff. Now, to finish, we've got the Lords podcast quiz. This month's got a slight Wisden theme to it. I'll just quickly explain the rules. There's not much knowledge that comes into this. Basically, I'm going to ask you about a cricketer and a non-cricketer, and all you have to do is tell me which one is older, and you're going up against each other. So I'll give you that, and then it's the best out of five. So Andrew, as is tradition, the player or ex-player always goes first, and Lawrence, you go second. So one of five Wizard cricketers of the year, Moeen Ali, or international acclaimed pop star Rihanna. Andrew, who is older?
I am going to go for Moeen Ali.
Does that mean I have to go for Rihanna?
You can go for the same one. We can draw.
I'd go for Moeen Ali as well.
Rihanna is older by a few months. So it's a nil-nil there. On to the second one, Lawrence. Who is older, Nasser Hussain, who was Wisden cricketer in 2003, or Cameron Diaz?
I know who looks older. well, perhaps the answers are surprising when I go Cameron Diaz.
Oh, I'm going to have to go with Nasser.
Nasser is indeed older by a full 5 years.
5 years.
Poor Cameron. She must be gutted.
That was a trick question.
It's 1-0 to you, Andrew. Third question. Who is older? Gary Ballant, who is, of course, Wisden Cricketer of the Year this year, or the singer Adele?
Adele's album came out when she was 21. I think I'm going Adele, just.
I think I was going to say that, but I'm 1-0 down with 3 to play, so I might have to give the opposite answer, Gary Ballant.
We've gone 2-0 down. It is Adele by 1 year. She's 26, Ballant is 25. All right. Who is older? Geoffrey Boycott. This is you, Lawrence, to go first. Or Alan Bennett.
Is this the last one?
No, there's one more to go. Okay. Because you drew the first one. Okay. So it's 2-0.
Boycott or Bennett.
So a must win, by the way.
This is a must win. Well, you can just give the same answer if you want.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Good strategy. It's a strategy England needs
exactly.
Right now.
Defensive. I won't make any comment about your captaincy. I'll go for Boycott.
Can you repeat the question, please? So, Boycott or
Alan Bennett?
Alan Bennett. I will go, just to keep you happy, I'll go Alan Bennett.
It is Alan Bennett. By a full 6 years.
This is a fix.
Well, I've put a bonus question in here, just as to give you a chance to get back into it, Lawrence, even though I don't think you can now. Boycott was 1965 Wisden Cricketer of the Year. There was four others. If you can name one of them.
Was MJK Smith one of them?
No.
That's bad. I should know all these things. 65.
It's been 152 editions. It's 5 each edition. Shall I give you the who?
Shepherd?
No, it was Peter Burge, Jack Flavel, Graham McKenzie, or Bob Simpson.
Great.
Were your answers? Well, just to finish off anyway.
The sack.
final one. Andrew, you used to go first. Who is older? Wisden Cricketer of the Year from 2005, Andrew Strauss, no conferring, or the current Wisden editor, Lawrence Booth?
Ooh, good question. Well, Lawrence Booth's got to be older, sure. He's editor of Wisden. He's got to be at least 20 years older than me.
He's the youngest editor.
Any reasonable person looking at us would probably say Andrew, but I don't know. I'm trying to think when the age was when I started getting older than cricketers, which is not so long ago. I think Andrew might be just fractionally older.
It's you, Lawrence, by a couple of years.
Thank God for that.
So 4-0 to you, Andrew. Very well played. Well, just to finish, Sean, I'd like to ask, what have you got coming up over the next few weeks?
Just looking forward to the start of the English cricket season. I think my first commentary gig with Sky is England versus Ireland in Dublin, which should be a good night out, and then a very busy international programme. So I'm looking forward to every Ashes summer is an exciting one. This one's no different. Let's hope England get back to winning ways.
And Lawrence?
I'll be in Dublin as well. I'm taking a little holiday in Switzerland. A few days. I need to take my holidays before the cricket season starts. Bit of county cricket. Might be following a certain KP around, see how he's getting on with Surrey. And then it'll be into the one day internationals, or is it the test first against New Zealand? It's probably the test, isn't it? So yeah, looking forward to it very much.
Good stuff. Well, many thanks for both coming on. I hope you've enjoyed it.
Thanks very much.
Cheers, thank you.
Well, many thanks for tuning in all. We'll be back next month with more cricketing stories from Lords. So remember to follow us on Twitter. Our handle's @HomerCricket. Be our friend on Facebook, and for all the latest news from Lords, just go to lords.org. See you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.